Hello, and welcome to the Matthew Clark Interview Podcast, where we sit down with the industry's key figures. Today, we're talking to Gerard Swart, winemaker at Flagstone, one of South Africa's leading wineries. Thank you very much for having me here today, Gerard. It's a bit of a different place compared to places where I've been, but it's still a beautiful location. Got a nice bit of sunshine out today, so that's always good news.
Yeah, it's welcome to Flagstone Winery here in Somerset West. It's a little bit different from your cellars that you normally get on the R44 on the way to Stellenbosch, but I think that's the uniqueness and the quirkiness on Flagstone. Mm-hmm. We being situated in an old dynamite factory, being built in 1901 by Sir Cecil John Rhodes, and it's something you don't think you'll find in an old industrial park, this premium winery.
It is a great place to be in. It's a beautiful building, and there's a lot of work going around here, but I think the end result will be absolutely stunning.
It's a quite a modern winery inside the old building. So, like I've shown you, there's some unique machines in the winery that we utilize to make the wines. It's if you from the outside, you will never think there's a winery with a lot of barrels and a lot of tanks in here.
Bit of a mystery inside, yes. But a great surprise. So, just about yourself a little bit. I believe you have quite a bit of a history in winemaking from an early age already. How did you, when did you really know why you wanted to work in wine? How did you find out?
Yeah, I would say it's in our family, there's not a lot of winemaking history, but a lot of farming. Both my parents grew up in a region called the Overberg. Translated, that's over the mountain. It's a region in the Southern Cape where a lot of sheep and dairy and grain farming is happening. So our holidays was mostly spent on the farms, and from an early age I knew I wanted to be in agriculture. I didn't want to sit in a concrete building. I wanted to be out in the sun and in between the plants, when I was small, there was a book in my parents' house that I remember in wintertime lying on the couch paging through it, and it's a book that my father gave my mother in 1970 as a Christmas present, and it's all about the wine route in South Africa. And I can still remember there's one specific picture where it's two big open doors where you basically look through the doors and you see these stainless steel tanks in the back with some barrels in between. And I was just intrigued by it. And then when I studied at Elsenburg Agriculture, my father was a bank manager in a small rural town, and I worked on farms when on holiday time, and it was one of his clients that is a known winery, and I worked for one holiday in the winery, and that was the end. When I went back, I said, I don't just want to finish studying agriculture, I need to go on and study winemaking.
That is a great story. So do you think, because you really grew up in farm life, so you might have already had a bit of an affinity with viticulture. Was that the same for winemaking, or did you really have to work hard to get to this point?
I would say the farm life that I had knowledge of is more in sheep and in grain. So I had to work hard to get where I am at the moment. But I would say with my I've got a natural just feeling for plants. I always make the joke about my father. He's now retired and living in Bredasdorp. It's the one small little town there close to the farm where he grew up. And he's got almost a quarter of his garden is vegetable garden. So we always say we've got green fingers in our family. So we love working with plants. I think it's hard work. I've been in the industry now for 18 years, and it's with that experience that you just get stronger and stronger in the field.
Yeah. So hard work.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Play hard. Work hard. Play hard.
Yeah. That's my motto. So
the end result is always a positive point, though.
Yes.
Okay. So now I'm aware you've also travelled a bit, studying about wine, learning about different areas in the world. So you've been to France as well as California to work there in the wine industry. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Yes, when I was still very young, I went to France in 2001, in the south of France, did a vintage there. And then in 2004, I went to California in Napa to go and work at a very interesting cellar. It is owned by an Italian guy, and he actually owns two cellars. The one is Visa Tui, and the other one is Castello de Amoroso. And he was actually busy still building the Castello de Amoroso. So we were crushing at Visa Tui, and then we were traveling to Castello de Amoroso, where we were working with barrels that was caves in the hillside. We were taking the barrels out and taking them down to the new barrel room. But then in the bottom of the barrel room, below the old building, it was actually like a old dungeon, and he had like a torture chambers and stuff in the place. So it was a very interesting experience working for this Italian.
That is crazy, isn't it? So do you think you really took those experiences and implemented them here, or more took those experiences and used them here to make it even better?
I must say, there is some of the techniques that I've seen and learned from the French that I've seen that I've implemented, and then also the Americans, but then also being part of this big global business, Accolade Wines. We've got annually, we've got a senior winemaking conference in Australia, and I think that's the positive thing of working for such a big company and being able to travel a lot to these different regions. And just to interact with the other winemakers.
Mm-hmm.
So every year you learn something new, and we can just learn from each other, and I think that makes the Accolade brand, the business, just much stronger, having all these different countries where the winemakers can communicate with each other. And
So looking at the Flagstone range itself, we have 10 wines from Flagstone in our range, and it's nice to see, if you look at them all next to each other, they all have they're aligned, but they all have their own personality and theme, I would almost say. So for example, you've got the Music Room, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Writer's Block Pinotage, but they all have a story behind it. But why did you choose to put a story behind every single wine?
I think if you look at the history of Flagstone with Bruce Jack, that started it in 1998 in the V&A waterfront, he came to South Africa after studying in Australia, and he said, well, I want to start a winery. I don't have the money to go and buy these fancy wineries up on the mountain, big estate with all the vineyards. And also studying in Australia, seeing what they do there, he came back and he said, well, I want to do something different. I want to be a little bit quirky, just different from the mainstream. So he came back with that knowledge of what's happening in the Australian industry and said, well, let's implement it here in South Africa. Let's go out and let's go and search for unique vineyards, for pockets in South Africa where there's really something unique, and let's make more wine from that. And I think that's basically the philosophy of Flagstone. That's where you'll see some of our wines with Wine of Origin Western Cape, but it's some of our premium wines. It's because we utilize those different pockets of vineyards, those unique terroirs, make single wines that's quite unique, and then combine them to make something that's even more unique.
Yeah, so it's basically not just using one instrument, but getting the whole band together.
Yeah. That's me playing the full orchestra.
Full orchestra, fair enough. So four of the wines that we have are the range of white wines. Can you just run through these wines and tell us a little bit about those?
So I think on the premium side, we've got the Frieren Sauvignon Blanc that I think a lot of people will be quite well known with. That's a cool climate style of Sauvignon Blanc. It's actually one of the areas where Bruce and another, it was previously a partner of Bruce, started vineyards down in Ilum. So it's specifically cool climate. It's got that minerality, almost a flintiness to the wine, but it's also got that nice tropical fruit flavors. It's wine of origin Cape South Coast, so it's basically a region that stretched from Elgin through to Plettenberg Bay. So it's a nice cool climate style of Sauvignon Blanc.
Mm-hmm. And what about the other whites that you've got? So you've got the Worth of Mouse, Viognier, Noongan, Tributary.
Yeah, so on the premium wines also, the Tributary Chenin Blanc. That's a wine made from old bush wines. So the one vineyard was planted in 1976 and the other vineyard was planted in 1982. So the whole idea of that is to really make a wine that gives a tribute to these old vineyards that we've got in South Africa, old bush vines, and it's a nice complex Chenin Blanc. We make 25% of that fermented in barrel and the rest in stainless steel. And then the Word of Mouth Viognier. Viognier is quite an interesting varietal, and you get different styles of Viognier. You get more the perfumey style, and then you get more the dried fruit style, and where people will sometimes put a lot of oak on the Viognier. It's almost like your old Australian type of Chardonnay. For me, what I want out of a Viognier is I want that feminine style. I want that perfuminess, that elegance, and again a combination of two specific terroirs giving me more that cooler climate style, but still getting that nice perfumey aromas that you get from Viognier. And then the last one, the Noongan, so that's our lifestyle wine. That would be a wine that a lot of people will enjoy, wine by the glass. So it will be a house wine. That's a blend of Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier. It's 45% Chenin, 35% Sauvignon and 20% Viognier. And the Chenin gives that nice tropical fruit flavor. The Sauvignon Blanc gives the freshness, and the Viognier just adds depth to the wine, gives it a nice structure and gives that little bit of perfuminess to that.
Mm-hmm. So what's the story behind Noongan? Because the bottle itself has got this quite big cannon on the label. What does that refer to?
So the Noongan is, a lot of these wines will refer back to some of the history in Cape Town, because Bruce started the winery in 1998 at the V&A waterfront. So the Noongan is actually situated in Cape Town on Signal Hill, and that would fire at 12 in the afternoon, and that was a way for the ship captains in the old days to determine time to make sure the chromatograph that they had on the ship was accurate, so they could set the chromatographs to 12 o'clock. So it's very interesting in Cape Town, if you're walking around in the streets and at the coffee shops, if you want to know who's the tourist in town, you just wait till 12 o'clock and see who jumps underneath the table, and then you'll know who's the tourist.
Fair enough. Well, time for lunch then, isn't it?
12, yeah, 12 yeah. o'clock.
Okay, so this Noongan blend, it's got a bit brother in the red, or you know, a partner in red wine, the Longitude.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Longitude is a Shiraz Cabernet Sauvignon Malbec blend. Basically the same percentages, 45, 35 and 20% Malbec. Shiraz will give you that nice red berry fruit and also the spiciness, where the Cabernet Sauvignon gives more the darker fruit and a good structure to the wine. And Malbec is just the one that just polishes it off with nice red berry cherry flavors, and just giving a nice soft tannin to the wine.
What about the story behind this wine then?
So the Longitude, it links in with the Noongan actually. Mm-hmm. So if you look on the Longitude label, you'd see the old ball tower. That the clock tower that's been in the, or that is in the waterfront, and that big ball would drop also at 12. So the problem was that the ship captains couldn't sometimes see the gun, the Noongan, and the thing is they didn't set it on the sound, because the sound travels slower than time, So they would look at the at the plume of smoke that they'll see when the gun fire at 12. The problem is that if you in Cape Town and you see the southeaster blowing, you'll see there's a cloud blanket on the mountain. So what they done is they had the ball tower, and at 12 it will drop, so that's in the harbour area, so they could easily see it, and they could then set their chromatographs to the correct time, and they used the chromatograph to determine longitude on the ocean. So that's where that comes from.
So they're nice partners in crime in that regard.
Yes, there we go.
Right, so we've got four more reds as well in the range. Dragon Tree, Writer's Block, Music Room, and Dark Horse. Can you tell us a little bit about those ones as well?
Okay, so Dragon Tree, where the longitude is in the lifestyle range, the Dragon Tree will be in our premium range, and that is what we call a Cape blend. So in South Africa, like you've got a Bordeaux blend in France, or Rhone blend, in South Africa we've got a Cape blend where you need to have at least 30% pinotage and a maximum of 70% pinotage in the wine. We utilize Cabernet Sauvignon Shiraz with pinotage in the blend. We feel the three varietals really work well together. And that wine specifically has won the 2014 vintage has won one of the top five Cape blends in the country. So we're quite proud of our heritage of pinotage. And you'll see also in the Flagstone range that we've got quite a few pinotage wines. You've got two of the wines on Matthew Clark.
Sorry. So what about the Writer's Block then? Because that's the pinotage that we have in our range.
Yes, so Writer's Block is our premium or super premium pinotage. Writer's Block is an interesting vineyard. It's situated in the Brede Kloof, high up on the mountain. It's around 650 to 720 meters above sea level. And it is just really a great vineyard, so high up on the mountain, having very cool evenings, and then quite moderate daytime temperatures. We harvested quite late compared to some of the other pinotage vineyards in South Africa. We only start harvesting that vineyard end of February, where most of the other producers are finished with their pinotage. And it's just a great vineyard. And the only problem situated so high up in the mountain is we've got competition with our four-legged friends, the baboons. So they also love the pinotage, and they will help us harvest it. The only problem is we don't get the fruit. So, it is really a great vineyard, and it's a great pinotage. That wine has been in the 10 vintages that I've made now. Five of them has been in the APSA top 10 competition in South Africa for the best 10 pinotages in the country. It's been voted as in the top 10.
Oh, that is absolutely amazing, isn't it?
So we're proud. We're very proud of that specific wine. And then the next is the Cabernet Sauvignon, the Music Room. Now, the Music Room is a very interesting blend. It's again these unique terroirs that I work with that we searched out, and it is a combination of two warmer climates, but then there's one that's the oddball is Elgin, where people are quite known for that region with Pinot Noir, Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. We've got Cabernet Sauvignon, but we only harvest it in the first to the second week of April, so it's quite late in the season. But the great thing of that is we get what we call a long hang time for the fruit, so the fruit can ripen perfectly without the sugars going too high. So we've got a nice elegant style of wine. Now, combining the two warmer climates, the one giving a lot of structure, the other one more primary fruit, that one gives the elegance to the wine. And depending on the vintage, we'll use a little bit more or less of that cool climate fruit.
Mm-hmm.
But it really just takes the wine to the next level.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then the Dark Horse Shiraz?
The Dark Horse Shiraz, that again is a combination also of three different terroirs. That is also a wine that's quite interesting, the name of Dark Horse. So when you look at Shiraz vineyards, if you look at a Cabernet Sauvignon or a Merlot, you'll see the shoots are
quite up in your terracing system. It's just a neat and tidy vineyard. If you look at Shiraz, the canes are very flexible, so you've just got a little breeze going through the vineyard and all your work is undone. All the canes are lying over each other and it just looks messy and scrappy. And then if you look at the bunches, you see these big bunches and quite big berries compared to Cabernet Sauvignon. The color doesn't look that dark. And then you think, oh, how can I make really a top-class wine out of it? Then you bring it into the cellar, start doing those punch downs on the fermentation, and suddenly this color comes out, and this sweet red cherry berry aromas and the spiciness, and that's why we call it the dark horse.
It's quite an untamed variety in that,
yes,
in that case.
It can be quite a beast.
Yeah. Right, now just to talk about the final wine that we have in our range. It's a rather special wine. It's the Flagstone Time Manor Place Pinotage Reserve. What makes this wine so incredibly special?
Yeah, see that's where I said the broad range of Pinotage that we make, and the Time Manor Place is, if you take from the writer's block, the block runs from a southeast slope over to a northwest slope. And it comes down from the top part of the block down the mountain. Basically, it drops in altitude of around 70, 80 meters. And that would be normally on the northwestern side. That's the little bit warmer side of the vineyard, and the top part. So that's where really the vineyard, it struggles. It's very, a lot of stones, very stony soil. And it's just, you get an incredible concentration on those wines from that fruit. And what we've done in 2010, we started with this wine, and we were tasting through for the writer's block out of all our barrels from that vineyard. We were tasting and saying what's good enough to go really into writer's block, and we would just be tasting some of the barrels and say, well, this is almost too good to go in writer's block, we need to do something with it. And so Time and a Place is a selection of only 5 barrels. It's all new barrels. Only a selection of 5 from the writer's block that we will make in only the best vintages. So it's basically to put a stamp down to say, well, we're proud of Pinotage, and we're willing to really put the top wine separately in a bottle and charge a premium for that and put it in a beautifully packaging. And like you've got people putting Cabernet Sauvignon or Bordeaux blends and saying, well, this is my top premium, my icon wine. We felt, being proudly South African, that Pinotage is our icon wine.
Yeah, well, it is something to be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've done well.
Thanks.
So, just pass on from the wines. You've absolutely making amazing wines, and they're really showing the quality as well as the packaging. It's basically a whole package altogether, I would say. So what for you would be like your goals for the coming few years? What would you like to achieve now in the coming few years?
What I would like to achieve is to win the Vintners Classic.
What's the Vintners Classic?
It's our local surf competition for all the surfing winemakers. Everybody will say they want to win the Decanter Winemaker of the Year, International Winemaker of the Year. Yeah, that's ultimately a goal, but in my part-time, surfing is one of my hobbies, and that's a bigger goal for me personally to achieve.
An achievable one?
A difficult one. The competition is quite stiff. There's some very pro surfers in between all the winemaking, but it's becoming quite a big one. I think we're around now 70 winemakers participating in this surfing competition every year, and it just grows. It's a great competition, and it's a great sport, and we've got actually a charity that we're working with now. So every year when we enter the competition, we need to give a 6-bottle case of wine that we take from the barrels. That is blended together, so then you get a wine that we call the Big Red.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've done now between a few of the sellers, we actually now donating a barrel full of wine that we bottling and then selling on the auction, and it goes back to a special charity that works with underprivileged kids to teach them surfing, because just not just being a nice sport, it's a skill, and it learns you a lot about life also with surfing.
So it's
a great sport to be part of.
Yeah, well, that sounds amazing. And if I'm right, the sea is not too far from here, is it?
Yeah, it's always a good excuse on a Saturday afternoon when we're busy crushing and we finish the work, and I can just quickly head off 350 meters to my local surf spot and just what we call it, we quickly go and dust or rinse off the dust.
Then
we're ready for the next day's work.
Fair enough. So just one last question to finish. Now, I know it is a difficult question to answer, but I've got to ask, what would be your absolute favourite wine from the wines you produce, and how would you say is it best enjoyed?
I must answer that one putting my South African hat on. So that would be my writer's block, Pinotage.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, being a typical South African, we like our barbecue. A braai, what we call. So, but Pinotage is something that goes very well with venison. So having a nice piece of venison, we put on the coals, having a braai and enjoying a glass of writer's block.
Yeah, so definitely not a barbecue, it's got to be a braai.
It's a braai, we call it a braai.
Yeah. All right, well, I think that's a wrap for us. So thank you so much for having me here today. Mm. It's been absolute...
thank you, Jacqueline. It's been nice. Thanks.
To find out more about Flagstone Wines, visit the Matthew Clark website or speak to your account manager. And join us next time when we will be chatting to James Downs, viticulturalist at Shannon Wines.